Buon appetito.
Guten Appetit.
Smacznego.
Sahten.
Jeg håber, I vil nyde maden.
请大家尽量吃.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Enjoy your meal. Here on Earth.
Here on Earth.
Приємного аппетиту.
Here on Earth.
We've been eating dinner now for probably about 2.5 hours. The sausage has just come off the grill. Mario has started playing the guitar while we're eating. We have lots of vino and glasses and bread. And that's the great thing about being in Italy, is that a meal is a long time. It's about getting together and eating food and drinking and talking. And we were just discussing music for probably the last half an hour. And it's a community.
Mark Leslie spent 4 weeks living with the Stefani family in Viterbo, Italy. From Nonna, he learned how to cook authentic family recipes. From Alessandra, her daughter, he learned how to speak Italian. And from the family, he learned a whole new way of life. Welcome to Food Friday on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jean Faraca. This hour, Beyond the Pasta. Have you ever been invited into someone's home for a meal while you were traveling? Does the idea of a short-term immersion course in language and cooking appeal to you? What does learning to cook teach you about another culture? We're at 1-877-GLOBE-07, 1-877-456-2307. Send an email to hereonearth@wpr.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter under Here on Earth Show, one word. Mark Leslie works in professional theater as a stage manager. His true love, however, is food, and he had ample opportunity to immerse himself in his first love when he spent those 4 weeks with the Stefani family in Viterbo. He wrote about it in a wonderful book called Beyond the Pasta, Recipes, Language, and Life with an Italian Family. And he joins us from the studios of WHLA in La Crosse. Hi, Mark.
Buongiorno, buongiorno. Come stai?
Ah, bene, bene. E tu?
Perfetto. Sto bene, grazie.
Well, you learned nicely, didn't you?
I try, provo ogni giorno. I try every day to speak a little bit of Italian. I speak like a child, but that doesn't stop me from trying.
And who do you speak with?
Anybody I can. I'll be in rehearsals and I'll get everybody to come to the table by saying, andiamo, andiamo, let's go, or, you know, silenzio, if I need to get the room quiet, or, you know, every now and then it leaks out. So it helps.
So you actually grew up in Illinois near the Wisconsin border. You spent a lot of your summers in Wisconsin. How did you develop your love for food?
I think that my earliest memory, which I actually write about in the book, is driving with my grandparents in their pickup truck camper towards Hayward, actually to Lake Nancy in Minong, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember sitting in the little bench seat with the window drape cracked open while my grandmother was cooking eggs in bacon grease while we were driving. I think that was completely illegal at the time, but it's a wonderful memory. And that's really my first memory of food, is kind of looking out. And I remember, you know, that the cornfields kind of rippling, you know, how the rows of corn kind of ripple as you drive by them.
Absolutely.
And being fascinated by that, and of course, you know, bacon and eggs in the morning, what could be more wonderful than that? My grandmother took great pride in making sure that she was the one who introduced all of us children to the virtues and the benefits of the runny, soft, cooked egg. So, over easy egg, it was perfect.
Uh-huh. And actually, you had you were attacked with a craving for bacon and eggs while you were living with the Stefanis.
I was. Every morning I would come down, and breakfast in Italy is not a large meal. There is no history like we have in America about, you know, start your day off with a good breakfast. They really don't do that in Italy. So when I would come down, the first day I had a croissant, or actually kind of a little hard roll, and then I had some yogurt and a little bit of tea, and Nonna asked me in Italian if I would like some cereal. And I said, oh, sure. And of course, the next day I had cereal there on the table as well, served with warm milk, not cold milk. So that's always an interesting use of refrigeration in Italy. But that's, you know, so we got a little bigger because I was an American, the breakfast there. But it started off simple. So after the sixth day, I was dying for like an American breakfast, a Saturday morning, you know, French toast and bacon or eggs over easy and bacon and bread. And but it just wasn't possible. I couldn't try to explain to Nona, hi, could you buy some American bacon and fry me up some eggs? And so that wasn't really possible.
But you did go from one Nona, your own Nona, to the Stefani Nona.
Exactly. She is an incredible woman. She has such a spirit. When you meet Nona, she has she's like this little sprite, and she's like this mischievous elf. She always has a little glint in her eye, and she's very interested in kind of entertaining you. She always tells little jokes and stories, which, of course, in Italy, the fool of the joke is always a German. Of course, my ancestry is Germany, so that I thought was always very funny. But she was a great, great teacher and has a very great spirit and a kind of an open soul, which I think is really amazing.
Well, you seem to have an open soul yourself.
Well, thanks. I try. I mean, life is short, and for me, like food, it's about the experience of being together. I have this great mantra about, you know, bring your family to the table and change a life one meal at a time. And so for me, the food obviously needs to be edible on the plate. It's even better if it's a delicious meal. But the fact that we all gather around the table and kind of tell our stories and celebrate life, both good and bad, I think it's as important to cry and argue as it is to laugh and celebrate.
So that dinner that you were sharing with us, that was 2.5 hours before the grilled sausages arrived.
Yeah.
How long did it last? And was it in the middle of the day? Was it a special Sunday meal?
Well, we had been planning all week while I was there to they always like to impress me with new dishes every time I go to Italy. And this time we decided to go to Francesca's house. Francesca is Alessandra's daughter, one of her two daughters. And Francesca and Mario have an apartment, so we were going to go over and visit their apartment. And they thought, oh, it'd be great to have panunto. And panunto is really greasy bread is how it translates. And so you cook sausage and you start off with pancetta that's been seasoned with fennel, and you grill it on a grill in the fireplace in the living room, and you take it off as it cooks and put it between two pieces of bread, and you kind of mash it so the bread absorbs all the spices and all the fat, which is, you know, good fat. I think fat is good sometimes. And that's how it went. So we got there about 8. I mean, dinner in Italy is usually 8:30. 9 o'clock is usually when dinner is in Italy. And I think we left there at about midnight, 12:30. So we were there for a good 4 hours, which sometimes in Italy, if you go to a restaurant and you sit down at a table, that restaurant is yours for the night. So you can, there's nobody going to push you out. They're not going to rush you through a meal. They really embrace, the whole culture does, that idea of bringing your family together, gathering around a table with friends and eating and celebrating life.
And practicing the art of conversation.
Certo, certo, sure. They love to talk and tell stories. I mean, that's where, I always say that's where you learn who you are if you're growing up and you eat every meal at the table or one meal a week at the table. You learn who you are, what your family believes or they don't believe, how you fit into that or don't fit into that, what you agree with and what you don't agree with. And that's how it is in Italy. I mean, you'll be laughing one moment, arguing the next, you know, crying the next moment after that. It's a full range of life at the table. And that's something I think is so important.
Now, who does the labor involved in getting a meal like that together? And were there two meals a day like that?
Yes, there was. When we first started in the morning, Nona and I would go shopping for 2 hours, about an hour. Then Nona and I would cook together, getting lunch ready for about 2 hours. Then I would go to language class for another 2 hours. We'd eat lunch at 1:30. That's when lunch was, and everyone came home for lunch. So really, Nona and I prepared the meal. And if I'm not there, as I'm not often, Nona prepares it all herself. Sometimes Alessandra will help. Alessandra's a very good cook. Francesca has now started coming over and helping sometimes. So Francesca is starting to learn the kind of family traditions and family recipes from Nona. The other daughter, Mariana, she's busy. She runs horses as a horse trainer, and so she's not often able to come to cook, but she's there for lunch. So it's a great family experience, the togetherness.
Did you see any indicators that this, age-old practice of bringing the family together twice a day is breaking down?
It is. It is breaking down in Italy, and often Alessandra will talk about it. There's one fast food restaurant in Viterbo, only one, and they've started noticing that because of that, there are starting to be lots of obese children, and they're starting to kind of draw their own conclusions. Lots of stores in Italy, it's been a long tradition that they would close for lunch from 1:30 to 3:30. You know, banks are closed. Everyone is closed. Everyone goes home or goes out for lunch. And they take a while to eat. They just don't eat in 30 minutes and come back. And that is slowly dying. They're slowly kind of becoming more like us in America. I would say right now, for me, Italy feels like it did here in America maybe 30 years ago. I'm not quite old enough to say 40 or 50 years ago with any kind of memory, but that's the sense of it, is that they're slowly getting where people are working two jobs, where businesses are staying open later at night. They're not being closed for lunch, for the siesta or for lunch. So slowly, and I think there's something sad about that. I think we lose part of ourselves for the sake of convenience.
And also women joining the workforce.
Exactly.
Who don't, you know, really have the leisure anymore to spend the kind of day that apparently you were privileged to spend, going to the market with Nonna, preparing the family pranzo.
Right, lunch, right.
With the grandmother. This is very labor intensive.
Well, yes and no. What I think is great about the Italian cuisine is that it's simple. It's really from the ground to your plate in the fewest steps possible. Now, obviously, some dishes do take a while. But you can, in a half hour, you can make a pasta sauce while you're boiling water for the pasta to go into to cook, and they all kind of time out at the same time. So it just depends on how extravagant you want to be. Chicken cutlets, which Nona cooked a lot, they cook very quickly. It only takes a couple of minutes to cook a chicken cutlet. So, you do have to plan your life. You just can't. I mean, lots of people, especially because they don't have a lot of refrigeration in Italy or the large size refrigerators that we have here, they go shopping every day or every couple of days, or they'll stop on the market on the way home. So they seem to be buying fresher things, and they're eating what's available at that moment, as opposed to going to the freezer and pulling out the frozen vegetables and the frozen meat and having to thaw that stuff out. They're buying it fresher. It's not as frozen. So in a way, that kind of prep time is quicker.
Well, okay. So it doesn't take very long to cook chicken cutlets. But what about preparing the chicken? I mean, when I lived in Italy, which was back in the 60s, and you went to the market and bought a chicken, you had to spend a lot of time getting the feathers off. Now, not all the feathers, but there are still a lot of pin feathers that were left.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like the kind of supermarket chicken that we're used to here. I don't know how that might have changed, but even just the preparation of the cutlets, unless you can get them from a butcher already prepared.
Right. Well, you can. I mean, if you go to a grocery store in Italy, they come in all different kinds of sizes, and they have the same things that we do here. You could already buy it sliced into cutlets if you'd like. You could buy a half of a chicken breast and slice it lengthwise into quarter-inch slices and get three or four cutlets off of a chicken breast, which actually speaks to kind of portion control in Italy. In America, we eat one whole half of a chicken breast. Well, in Italy, you may eat two chicken cutlets, which is actually half of a breast. So you actually eat less food, although you think you're eating more because there's two things in front of you instead of one. And in as far as markets go, I mean, yes, you can go to the butcher and you can find chickens with heads on them. I haven't seen one yet at the butcher that still had feathers on it. Although actually, one time I was in up in Siena, and we were at a farm, and this woman was making chicken for us and lamb, and the lamb had a little bit of hair on it still. And one of the people traveling with us was like, "That lamb still has hair on it." I'm like, "Don't worry, it's going to be cooked over the fire, it'll burn off. So sometimes, yes, your food looks a little live still, but it's not. But they're almost as, I mean, they are as modern as we are here. So you can go in and find things already cut if you don't feel like cutting it yourself.
We're talking with Mark Leslie, who spent 4 wonderful weeks in Viterbo, Italy, totally immersed in the life of an Italian family, learning how to cook from the nonna and learning how to speak Italian from Alessandra, her daughter. What a wonderful way to travel. I mean, you're not moving around that much, but talk about immersion on so many levels. I'm Jean Ferracca. You're listening to Food Friday on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. Mark's book is called Beyond the Pasta, Recipes, Language, and Life Within an Italian Family. With an Italian family, I should say. And we're at 1-877-GLOBE-07. Does this sound appealing to you, the idea of a short-term immersion course in language and cooking? Where would you go to get this kind of experience? And have you ever been invited into someone's home for a meal while you were traveling? What was that like? And why is it that learning how to cook teaches so many other things as well? 1-877-GLOBE-07. Does the idea of having 2 full meals a day appeal to you? And do you bring your family together at the table? 1-877-GLOBE-07. Can a Muslim be an American? Akbar Ahmed visited over 100 mosques in answering that question and finally settled on the Founding Fathers. I'm Jean Ferracca. Join us for this encore broadcast of our Gabriel Award-winning program, Inside Islam, Muslims, Mosques, and American Identity, Monday at 3 here on Earth.
Support for WPR comes from Chad's Carpentry, dedicated to educating customers about environmentally friendly building practices and the benefits of building tight and ventilating right. Learn more at chadscarpentry.com. Chad's Carpentry, building a better world, one remodeled home at a time.
Listen to Here on Earth anytime with the Here on Earth podcast. You'll receive every show conveniently sent to your computer or smartphone. You'll find it on iTunes or at hereonearth.org. iPhone and iTouch users can also stream us on the Public Radio Player application. The Here on Earth podcast. It really is radio without borders. I'm Jean Ferracca. You're listening to Food Friday on Here on Earth, Radio Without Borders. We've just been introduced to Nonna, the matriarch of the Stefani family, with which Mark spent 4 glorious weeks learning how to cook, learning how to speak Italian. And here we have a clip of Nonna teaching Mark how to make pasta.
Nonna is working the dough now into a ball, and you have to slam it down. Of course, I think we're both going to end up with flour, flour all over us. Grazie, Nonna.
Guarda che si tocco.
Sì, sì.
Pezzo, eh?
Sì, pericoloso.
È pericoloso, sì. Non pericolosa.
Sì, it's very dangerous to cook next to Nonna in the kitchen. That's a good way to work the flour into the dough, which what the extra flour is doing is absorbing some of the liquid, and she's working it until she gets the right consistency in her hand. She's made this recipe 3 or 4 times before, and so she knows what she's feeling for. I'll probably jump in here and knead real soon so I can test it as well. No. Mamma mia!
Okay, Mark, obviously you were having fun. What exactly was going
time.
On? By the way, we're going to post that video on our Facebook
great.
And Twitter pages, which will explain everything. But just listening to you laugh and trying to figure out what was going on is a lot of fun in itself.
Well, what Nonna was in Italian, pasta. The word pasta means dough. So you can make a pasta for a pie crust, or you can make a pasta for fettuccine. And what Nona was making was pasta or dough for babà. And babà is a Neapolitan dessert, which the dough is very soft and kind of bakes up like a bread, almost like a brioche. And then you take it and you soak it in rum. And so it was the very first time I'd ever done it. And I'd been videotaping all week with Nona that week, and so she's very comfortable in front of the camera. And so we got ready to shoot it, and I, of course, knelt down right next to her. And when she started slamming it, I started getting flour. Well, then we just started cracking up. And, of course, then she's like, "Ooh, I'm having fun. I'm being a little dangerous." And so it was great. And that's the kind of spirit we have when we cook. She wants you to be excited about the food. She wants you to be engaged in conversation with her. And so that's what that clip is about making babà.
Baba au rum?
See. Yep. It was soaked in rum and it was fantastic. It was really, really good.
Uh-huh. Now, something just occurred to me. You're involved in the theater. You're mm-hmm. a stage manager. And did you find that Italian family life was theatrical?
Oh, definitely. It's definitely. I mean, I sit at rehearsals. I'm up at Great River Shakespeare Festival up in Winona, Minnesota right now. And we sit in rehearsals and I watch people argue and fight and laugh. And what happens is that when you sit in this family, it's the same way. There's lots of drama. In the book, Francesca wanted to go away to Naples with her boyfriend. Now, she was 19 at the time, and the family was not having it. Alessandra and her husband, Angelo, whose nickname was Lilo, were not letting her go. And at one dinner conversation, Francesca was talking about it and crying and yelling and laughing. And I mean, she was trying everything she could to get her parents to say yes. And finally, Nona took her side. Well, then, of course, that pitted Nona against Alessandra, her daughter, about Francesca, the granddaughter. So there was this large conversation. And all of a sudden, and I thought they kind of told each other kind of, you know, where to go, so to speak. And there was this giant silence at the table. And all of a sudden, Nona reached over and grabbed a bowl of cantaloupe and said, "Melone" to Alessandro, you know, melon. And Alessandro's like, "Certo." And then we were back to laughing and it was all over. So it was great. It was, you know, one of those things where I feel like, you know, if you watch Moonstruck or something, where people are like, "Ma, put the," you know, people do that. People are very passionate in Italy. They let the passion out. They talk with their hands. They're very dramatic. And in the end, life is, well, you hug, you kiss, you laugh, you make up, you know, life is joyous.
So let me understand. The issue was that the granddaughter wanted to go away with her boyfriend?
Yes, for the weekend and to Naples. And there was no having that.
Her parents were opposed, but her grandmother took her side?
Well, Nona thought, you know, she was kind of helping to ease the pain at the table. And Nona thought that if, you know, that Francesca was a good girl. She was a responsible girl. And so she decided to say that. And then, of course, Alessandra jumped in and was like, "No, Mom, she's not going to go. She can't go because they're going to be alone," and on and on. It was just very interesting. So, it was one of those things. Well, I think, you know, sometimes grandparents will take your side. And I don't know sometimes if it's to make their own child, your parent, upset. So I think, sometimes I think grandparents can be devious in that way. A little payback.
So you must have felt completely at ease with this family.
I did over time. The first couple nights when I sat at the table, and I speak very little Italian. I mean, I know how to speak some Italian, but I'm not fluent by any stretch of the imagination. I always say, you know, parlo come un bambino, I speak like a child, which I do. But the first couple days I was sitting at the table, I would catch things here and there. I write about in the book how there was this big conversation, and Alessandra, who was always asking me, you know, "Do you understand what's being said or what can happen?" And I was like, "Well, they're either talking about cabbage or horses." And because
well,
the word
actually,
for cabbage—
Actually, that's very understandable that you'd be confused.
Yeah, because the word
cavallo
for cabbage
and cavolo.
Yeah, that's right. And although they're spelled a little differently, but it's true, cavallo or cavolo. And so I said, "I think they're talking about cabbage." Of course, they were talking about horses. So they all laughed because, you know, obviously Mariana wasn't riding a cabbage during the day. So it was one of those. And as we got going, and I was always making a fool of myself or putting my foot in my mouth or saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. And of course, that that kind of thing just opens up everybody to kind of shared experiences. And so by the end, I'm now, when I go back and visit them, I am family. I'm their American son.
And so tell us, so you are obviously were totally integrated into this family eventually. But what right. were your apprehensions beforehand and in making the decision that you were going to go for it?
Well, I'm in theater, so I work on shows, which means I arrive at a rehearsal in a room full of people I've never met before, and we kind of, quote-unquote, live together, spend every waking moment together for 12 weeks. I decided to go for 4 weeks because I thought, well, I can do anything for 4 weeks. But at the same sentence, I'm also thinking, well, I'm going to be in this family where only one person speaks English. That's Alessandra. No one else spoke English. And I speak very little of the language. So what challenges, like how are we going to find common ground? And we found all kinds of common ground. And food was a great place to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scared. I was nervous. I had no idea what kind of people they were. I didn't know if they were nice or, they could be just out for the money of teaching or, mm-hmm. You just never know. And I happened to fall into a really gracious family who is all about language and celebrating, wanting to share Italy and celebrating their knowledge. And so I just really got very, very lucky. And my personality is I'm up for anything, and they're kind of up for anything. So we clicked. We definitely clicked.
We're talking with Mark Leslie, who spent 4 immersion weeks with an Italian family in Viterbo, Italy, learning how to cook with the grandmother and how to speak Italian with the daughter. What about you? Does that appeal, the whole idea? Have you ever been to a cooking school abroad? And what is it about learning to cook that carries with it so many other lessons? Have you ever been invited into someone's home for a meal while you were traveling? 1-877-GLOBE-07. 1-877-456-2307. Email address is hereonearth@wpr.org. You can also leave a message for us on Facebook or Twitter. You'll find us under Here on Earth Show, all one word. And we have a chance right now for you to jump in. Did it feel like that? Just that you were jumping in?
That's exactly what it felt like. I really was holding my nose and jumping. When I got off the train in Viterbo, I didn't know who was going to meet me. I knew Alessandra was, but I was expecting one person to meet me, and actually Nona was with her, and Nona drove us home. Alessandra doesn't drive, so Nona drives. She still drives at 84, and she drives like a demon. So I was introduced real quick to, being thrown in the back of a car and windows down and whizzing through the city at, very fast through all of the traffic, and Nona and Alessandra in the back, holding her hair down. Mama, mama, ralente, ralente, slow down, slow down. And Nona would slow down a little bit, and then she would start picking up speed, and all of a sudden she was racing again. So Nona and I had a great time together. She was always pinching me on the back of my arm and winking at me, and we just developed this friendship. But it was completely jumping in, and I like that idea. There was this one vacation I went on. I was in England at Warwick Castle, and there was these two British girls standing in front of me, and we were on cue to get some ice cream, and they were about 8 years old in their little British schoolgirl outfits with their perfectly gorgeous accents. And the one turned to the other girl and said, "Ooh, let's be adventuresome and try the mint." And the other one said, "Oh, let's do." And so that's kind of how I live life. Let's be adventuresome and try the mint. And so I held my nose and jumped into the Italian mint, and it was great.
If by chance things hadn't worked out so well, could you have gotten out of there? Or if by chance you felt a little bit stifled by Italian family life, and after a couple of weeks, could you have escaped for a while?
Yeah, I could have. That people ask me, "Oh, what if we didn't work out?" I said, "Well, I would have just left during the day to go, shopping or taking a tour, or there are other things that I could have done." And actually, they've had people who come to visit them. There was a pair of Belgian women, I believe, who came for cooking. They came down in the morning and they stood in the kitchen and watched Nona cook. They never talked to her. She would always, invite them to try to make the pasta, like actually put your hands in it. And the woman said, "No, no, no." So they just stood there for one whole week, watching Nona cook in silence. And for Nona, that was and painful. It was a disaster for her. So, and then they would eat lunch and they would go upstairs and they would go out. They really weren't interested in kind of the family life. So I figured if things worked to, you know, not didn't work out so well, I could actually just, you know, have an Italian vacation. I would come home and eat, and I could always go up to my room and escape, quote unquote, if I wanted to. So there was a way out, and I wasn't so structured. I mean, I kind of made myself structured. I kind of made myself available to be structured for as much of that life, because that's what I was interested in. I was there in Italy. My first trip was during 9/11, and I fell in, and I was in Florence on 9/11. And the Italian people were so incredibly kind and open and generous. And when I felt like they didn't really have to be, and I fell in love with the culture. So I, by being in the full immersion program, that's what I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn the soul of a country through a family, and from the inside out in a way. And that starts with food, and that starts with language, and that starts with sitting around and seeing how a family lives. And so that's what inspired me. So I'm just glad that we all got along. Otherwise, I think I would have missed what I was hoping I would find. And I found that, but I found a million things more that I never had expected.
We have Beth joining us from Dodge County. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Jean. How are you doing today?
Just great, thanks.
That's good. I just wanted to chime in. I don't think about it very often, but I was an exchange student in 1981-82, and I stayed with two different families and in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think about it when I do it, but every time I crack an egg, that is something that harks back to there. My mother will crack an egg either on the edge of the counter or on the edge of her bowl, whereas the family that I lived with in Israel was in the habit of just cracking it flat on the counter and then putting it into the bowl. You know.
Such a little thing, and yet it stuck with you.
Yes, it's one of those things that I picked up there. You know, and you know, as far as eating at the table, you know, I'm constantly with the knife in my left hand versus reversing the hand, eating without switching my knife from one side to the other. I will keep the knife in, which probably my right hand now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Continental. My dominant hand.
Yeah, continental style, right? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
What I think is great about food is like this simple example of just an egg and what memories that brought back for Beth, I think is incredible. I always tell people that if I lived with you and every morning you came down for breakfast and I made you a piece of toast, buttered, cut in half, and put it in front of you and said, here's your toast, every day for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, you would come downstairs and I didn't put that piece of toast in front of you. You would say, I wonder if Mark's mad at me. Are you okay? Is everything okay today? And it's not about the food. It's about the shared experience of the food. So it's not that, you know, she didn't have some stellar cake recipe thing or they, you know, took a pig out and they buried it in the ground. It was an egg and cracking it on the counter. And that food is intense enough of an experience to open those kind of memories just by cracking an egg. I think it's incredible.
Thank you so much for the call, Beth. We're at 1-877-GLOBE-07. We're talking about immersion experiences with cooking and language. Mark Leslie wrote about his 4 weeks with an Italian family, learning just those things, how to cook and how to speak Italian. And he's written about it in his book, Beyond the Pasta, Recipes, Language, and Life with an Italian Family. We're gathering other such stories, and you're the only one who can provide it. 877-GLOBE-07, 877-456-2307. Are you interested in this kind of immersion experience? Would you like to know more about how to go about it? Perhaps you've been picked up by someone and taken home for a meal while you were traveling abroad. What was that like? And why is it that learning how to cook brings so many other lessons with it? And did it ever occur to you that maybe the Italians are obsessed with food? 1-877-GLOBE-07. 1-877-456-2307. Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us under Here on Earth Show. Email address, Here on Earth at WPR.org. You're listening to Food Friday on Here on Earth. I'm Jean Faraca.
The basis of those negotiations is clear: a viable Palestine, a secure Israel.
President Obama jump-started the latest chapter in the Israeli-Palestinian debate last week. We'll examine the special relationship between the U.S. and Israel Tuesday at 3 here on Earth.
Hi, this is Ad Issue host Ben Marins, inviting you to wrap up our talk week with me today after 4, when I'll ask you for your views on the news. Our guest news analyst will be Ken Mayer. You know, it's all Ad Issue later today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What's important about Italy, or what's particular about Italy, is that every single little town has a different version of some kind of dish. This dish, panotto, is very particular to this region. You won't find this dish in Venice or in Sicily or even in Rome, which is just an hour south of here. They may have something similar, but they won't have this exact dish. And that's what's fantastic when you travel through Italy, is that every little town has a different version of a dish, or even a particular dish that is only known to that town. And that's what's fantastic.
That's Mark Leslie. During a dinner with Italian friends, talking about the subtle variations in recipes from town to town and region to region, Mark spent 4 weeks in an immersion course set up, I think, by the Dante Alighieri Society. Is that right, Mark?
Correct. Out of Siena, Dante Alighieri, out of Siena.
Uh-huh. Living with the Stefani family in Viterbo. And there you were talking about the panunto again. You called it greasy bread. I have a quibble with that. Unto actually is closer to anointed, and I like
that
much
that
better.
Means?
Yeah, that's anointed bread.
Oh, well, and who doesn't like to be anointed with grease, with some pig fat? No, it's great. Well, when I asked Francesca about the name of the recipe, that's how she explained it, that it was the fat, the grasso, coming off of the meat. So that's why I thought it was. What I think is great about learning Italian is, or in this situation when you go there, especially as a student, you think you know what they're talking about. You think you're in store for a certain thing, and all of a sudden, as the experience goes on, you go, oh, that's what that is, or oh, this is what this is about. So even when you think you know what's happening, there's more surprises that I think are even more interesting. Like just now, I've now learned that means anointed, which sounds much better than greasy bread, doesn't it?
Poets say there's no such thing as a synonym, and I think that's a good illustration of it. But we have a message from Danny in Eau Claire. That's where you are. And he writes, in 2005, I studied in Scotland and was teamed up with a host family with 3 others. Kitty, the mom of the house, was insistent on Thursday night dinners. They would include wine, bread, and soup with beer, roast tatties, baked ham, and steamed veggies with tea and crackers. Always a full belly, lots of conversation, lots of laughs, and one of the best ways to show us insight into the Scottish culture. Thanks, Kitty, for everything, and thank you, Jean, for the show. Oh, thank you, Danny, for that message. We have open lines again, 1-877-GLOBE-07. Perhaps you were an exchange student somewhere else in the world. What was that like, and what was eating with the family like? We'd love to hear from you. 1-877-GLOBE-07. I'm wondering, Mark, if you've ever had a similar cooking school experience somewhere else in the world.
I would love to say yes, but no, I haven't. I've always wanted to go on one. I was staying in outside this little town outside of Siena called Castellina Chianti, staying on an agriturismo, which is a working farm where you can vacation. And I happened to kind of cook with the woman who ran the house there. But this has been my only kind of cooking school. I cooked or taught at cooking demonstrations, and I was cooking out at a cooking school out in San Francisco a couple weeks ago for a class, and I was leading that class. But I've never actually taken another cooking class, and I would love to. I would love to do it in Japan. I would love to do it in Greece. I would love to do it kind of, you know, worldwide, just to see what the difference is. And I have a feeling that what that really means is that I would realize that we're all the same. When it comes right down to it, when we all sit around the table and talk, we tell the same kind of stories about the love of our families, the love of life, the celebration of that, our joys, our sorrows.
Come to think of it, didn't the Stefanis have a Japanese guest living with them before you arrived?
They did. He was a chef. And he was there for a week, went home, and about 6 months later, Nona received in the mail a menu from his restaurant, and all of the meals on his menu were Nona's recipes. So there was, you know, Nona's this, Nona's that, Nona's everything had her name all over it. So we had a great laugh about that, about how she's now famous in Japan as well because all of her recipes are being cooked. And the recipes that I have in the book of hers are simple recipes that I thought everybody could cook, find ingredients very easy at any grocery store, to show just how simple Italian cooking was and how easy it is. Mm. And so Nona can't believe that she has all these people across the world now slowly cooking her recipes
for
her.
That's fantastic.
She always says, Marco, non lo credo. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And I keep saying to her, è vero. It's true. So for her, it's an amazing experience for her because, you know, she loves to cook for her family. That's how she tells them that she loves them every day. Mm. And now, in a way, she's telling people all across the world what that is about. And I just find that, you know, she can't believe it, and I embrace it.
Well, we're going to hear some of those recipes in just a minute. But we have Jamie on the line waiting to join us from Green Bay. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
Just fine, thanks. Thanks for the call.
Hi. I visited Morocco in 2009. I went there on a cultural exchange for a month, and we did stay with some families. And one thing about Moroccan culture is that, well, they're very laid back, and you do not just stop in someone's house and leave. You know, you are expected to stay. And one thing that they always serve you is Moroccan mint tea, which is kind of considered their national drink. And they make it with mint, green tea, and sugar, and they serve it in a little shot glass. They pour it very high to get good bubbles, and that's when you have good bubbles, then you know the tea is mixed well. The first glass, they pour back in the pot, so it's stirred. That's their method of stirring, and then they start to pour the tea. And it was served everywhere we went. We visited a bank, and they served us tea. We visited an elementary school, and they served us tea. And it just became such a comforting thing and so much of something that we were used to, that when I got back home, I had to learn how to make Moroccan tea. I was almost lost without it. So I started growing my own mint. I talked to some of my Moroccan friends that I had made about the method and how they do it. And often when I have people over in the summer and after a dessert or after a meal, you know, because that's when they often drink it, but they drink it all the time, I will do that. And it's kind of become one of my traditions that I like to share with other people.
And how exactly, how do you make Moroccan mint tea?
You basically take boiled water and you add just a bunch of mint to the bottom of your pot. You add your sugar as much as you want. You can make it as sweet as you want. And you add your green tea. And Moroccans often use this tea called Chinese gunpowder green tea. You stir it up and then you let it sit for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then when they pour it, and they do this in restaurants, they do it at home, they pour it very high, a few feet. They take the pot and they pour it a few feet from the glass.
Is that just to be theatrical?
They call it, when they do that, they call it mousse, that the tea has good mousse, and that means that it's stirred properly.
Uh-huh.
Actually, the first glass, they pour back in the pot, and then they start serving it. And they serve the pot very high. So you get the bubbles or the good mousse is what they call it.
Oh, thank you so much, Jamie. That's great. Let's go to Kathleen next in Westfield. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello. Hello, Mark. This is your aunt.
Hey. Oh, great. It's my aunt calling. Hi, Aunt Kathleen. How are you?
Well, speaking of family.
I know, exactly.
I'm just fine. I want to ask you a question. When we come to visit you this summer, while you're in up in Winona, will you make us the secret dessert? Don't give me the recipe. I just want to know if you'll make it for me.
Yes, what my aunt is referring to in the book I talk about, Nona shared with me a recipe for a tort, a ricotta cheese and lemon tort that's been in her family, Nona's great-great-grandmother. Her great-grandmother's great-grandmother started this recipe. So in their family, it's a very long tradition. It's only made at special occasions and for very special things. And the only person who has the recipe is Nona and myself. And I was sworn to secrecy that I couldn't ever share the recipe with anyone. And, of course, I won't. But I will definitely make it for my aunt. And she just can't watch me make it. And when I was back in Italy in January, I told Nona. She said, "Now, you haven't included the recipe. You haven't told anybody about the recipe." And I said, no. I would never give that recipe away, not even for $10 million. And Nona said, "Well, dunque, per un 10 milioni." I mean, she said, maybe for $10 million, maybe we'll think about that. But so we laughed about that. But yeah, no, I will. Thank you, Aunt Kathleen. My aunt Keen, as I used to call her when I was a child. I will make you the la torta di nonna.
And aunt, what did you call her?
My aunt Kathleen. Well, when I was little, I'd call her Aunt Keen.
Aunt Keen, Aunt Keen. You did something very, very smart in calling into the program, because now Mark has God only knows how many witnesses to his promise. And he wouldn't dare not follow through. So good for you. Good for you.
Brava, brava. Well, thank you, Aunt Kathleen.
Kathy calling from Tomahawk next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. We were lucky enough to have an Italian exchange student live with us for a year, 10 years ago already. And then we, in turn, visited and spent 3 weeks with her family in northern Italy. And it was just such an interesting experience going there and seeing their situation, living in the mountains. And gardening was huge. And sharing every morning, we'd get up and whatever was ready in the garden on that particular morning was made into a sauce or served with pasta at some point in the day. Mom and our exchange student, Emanuela, were vegetarians, or are vegetarians. Dad was not. So he was happy to cook for us a little meat here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And just a lovely setting, the simplicity. They just we walked every morning. We got up and down the mountain. We would walk to a little village and bring home in a cloth bag fresh milk, fresh cheese. So it would always be soft cheese.
Mm-hmm.
A loaf of bread that was baked there. Just a absolutely wonderful, wonderful time. But simple customs. We never ever ate indoors. They had a patio just outside the kitchen, and that's where we shared every meal.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much for calling, Kathy. We've got this streak of Kathleen's calling. A tweet now from Kathleen in Kirkwood, Missouri, who writes, "I worked on buildings in rural Mexico and ate most meals with families. It will always be my favorite cuisine because of that. As a lifelong avid cook, it was humbling and almost magical to share the table and learn new dishes with our new friends." That sums it up very well. And here, Mark, we've gotten almost to the end of the hour, and we haven't yet had a recipe from Nona. Oh, we know the one that you're not allowed to tell. Now, give us one that she would approve of sharing.
Well, there's a great recipe which speaks to the simplicity of the Italian cuisine, which also speaks to mushroom season kind of here in the upper Midwest, as we're about to go into kind of morels coming around. And, of course, Italians would always use whatever was fresh at the time. And there's a great recipe in the book for mushrooms with cream and pasta. And you simply saute mushrooms, a little bit of garlic, a little bit of chicken stock, and you take that, you add the pasta to it, and pour about a cup of cream over it for a pound box of pasta, and that's your recipe. I mean, that's as simple as Italian cooking gets. There's another recipe in the book for chicken with olives where you saute chicken, pieces of chicken, and you add a little tomato paste, a little bit of onion. You kind of cook those together, and then you add in chicken broth, and then you add in some olives, some green olives, not the ones with pimento, but just whole green olives, and you cook that for a while, and you eat that. So once again, it's chicken, a little tomato paste, olives, a little chicken broth, some onions. That's your meal. I mean, that's your main course. So there's a lot of recipes in the book. What I really hope when I wrote the book is that you would read through it, you would kind of fall in love with the family. At the end, there'd be a recipe that would give you an idea of what we cooked that day, so you could actually make it yourself, taste what I was tasting, really feel like you were experiencing a new cuisine, a new culture from the inside. And that's what I love about these recipes. That's what I love about Italian food, is that they're simple. If you're eating a zucchini, you know, frittata, a zucchini omelet, that's all that's in there. It's zucchini, a little bit of onion, and some eggs, a little bit of cheese. That's all that's in that dish. So you really get a taste of what you're eating, as opposed to lots of sauces.
And you know, the thing about Italian food is that it's much less about the cook and much more about the food itself.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That you really get the idea that they want, their pride is in when you taste that meal and you're really tasting the separate ingredients. I have an app for the book out. It's called Beyond the Pasta, and it plays on the iPhone, the iPad. And what I hope is that when people, you know, use it at home, I want people to be encouraged to cook again, to, even if it's not every night, because I know that's not possible, but you could actually, you know, cook once a week for family, for even yourself. You can like yourself enough to cook just for yourself. And that's what is great about Italian food, is that it's simple, it's fresh, it's readily available, and it tells a story as you eat it.
We have Anne joining us from Hawkins next. Hi, Anne.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. In 73-74, we had a Danish student living with us, and in 75, our family was lucky enough to go visit her, and a bunch of us kids all went out to the Black Sea, and we went wading about waist deep with a cloth bag, and you would step on a flatfish, which is called plaice, and then you would reach down in the water and grab the fish and put it in your cloth bag. And after we had a lot of them, we roasted them in a campfire on the beach and had that with
fantastic
wine and bread. It was just the best memory I have of that place.
That's positively biblical.
It is. That's exactly right. Brava, well, brava.
Thank you so much, Anne. That's a lovely way to end the hour. And thank you, Mark, very much
for being with us and sharing your
delightful experiences. Thanks to John Gatto, too, who's right there at WHLA in La Crosse, making the program possible. And you'll find links to Mark Leslie's book, Beyond the Pasta, when you visit our website at hereonearth.org. If you'd like to purchase a CD of today's program, call the radio store 1-800-747-7444. Ask for program number 520K. Joe Hartke is our technical producer. Carly Younger took your calls. Dominique Holler produced today's show with the cooperation of the Division of International Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, online at international.wisc.edu. And remember, you can always stream and download our shows after they air from our website. I'm Jean Faraca. Thanks for listening.